This is Mechanics After Hours.
Good evening from the rain-washed wherever we are. I'm not letting you know. You're not going to knock on our windows and come and interrupt one of our recording sessions. How dare you? Of course, that strange rant was brought to you by Ben, one of the guys from Rack Addicts After Hours. Yes, you have landed in the right place. If, of course, you were aiming for a music and technology podcast, and what I'm actually doing is spitballing and ad-libbing, because I don't know what episode this is. It's 140. Wow, I just made it. Episode 140, of course. We're nearly there at the 150, because that feels like it should be an anniversary of some kind. Who knows? Either way, we're here. Pete's with me. Most importantly, what have you been doing since I saw you on Tuesday?
Well, I have been doing a rather unusual photo assignment, and it includes video as well. So it was like a dual video photo.
Were you photoing from the hip and videoing from the shoulder?
Something like that. Something like that. But yeah, that was a strange thing. So I was having to photo and video a local business. Well, not local to me, actually local to my girlfriend's, down in Midhurst.
Is that probably how they sound in Midhurst?
No, I'm most probably insulting them by using an accent like that.
You'll never be welcome again.
In fact, when I do that to the girlfriend, say it like that, she goes, no, you say it like, I'm not going to try and do that again, actually. Anyway, that was interesting. But more importantly, I have a UDO Super 6 in the
delicious
studio.
I did wonder why the virus was in front of my face. Tell us everything. Is it as delicious as you wanted?
Yes, I haven't got really into it yet. I'm savouring it. I'm savouring the fact that it's present. I own it. It's physically here. I have gone through most of the patches. They are sort of samey in the respect that there's a whole load that just sound very Juno-esque.
Yes.
And then there's some unison bass lines.
Yep.
And then there's some sequences. So it's not
classic.
Like sometimes you get a synth and they've really gone to town with the audio design.
Quick interruption. Which was your favourite on that regard? Certainly not the Polybrute, or I don't think you liked the Peak for its default patches.
Polybrute was mainly about the core sound of the Artoria engine. It sounded sort of slightly buzzy and fizzy in a way that I didn't appreciate. The Peak wasn't...
Well, I mean, you bought a Summit, so you must have liked its innards or something.
The Peak wasn't that exciting, and I would imagine that's just the sound design that they ship it with.
Yeah.
But there's some individual sounds on the Summit, which you could load on the Peak, which are fantastic. So swings and roundabouts. And obviously, with the Summit being effectively two Peaks, you get the layering. So you get layered, lush, textured, gorgeous sounds. Very much like the Hydrosynth, which is...
Yeah.
Or the Hydrosynth Deluxe, which is, in my mind, two Hydrosynths.
Yeah. While I'm thinking of it, it might be the OB6. And do you remember I had that preset that I'd always go to that I just loved when we had it on display?
Yes.
Was it 53?
I believe it most
was
probably
it
40
was. Something.
No, it's,
it's early, anyway, in the numbers.
53 is the one that really sums up the sound of the OB6. It really has that Oberheim. Again, it's a sort of grungy,
juicy,
sort of not fizzy, sort of dirty sound, but dirty in a really good way. Wonderful.
Delicious. Anyway, back to the Super 6.
Yes, so there aren't that many presets anyway, because you've got two arrays, haven't you? And then you've got maybe another groups that might be done in letters.
Yeah, yeah.
Shows you how much attention I paid. So that doesn't really add up to a massive amount, and they're okay, but I haven't really paired it up with the Autobam, which is what I'm...
Ooh, yeah, that's going to be cool.
It has a delay, but it doesn't have a reverb, which I'm grateful for. I'm glad they haven't put a reverb in it, so you've just got delay and you've got a chorus. And again, in my mind, rightly or wrongly, the Super 6 is basically a Juno 60 on steroids, albeit with...
In a way.
Albeit with FPGA oscillators. So, and I would imagine that they've certainly taken some hints. And as with the Juno 60, it's got the two chorus buttons.
Yeah. And I guess in terms of the presets maybe not wowing, I think George really wanted it to be a programming experience anyway.
Yes, and do it yourself. And that's what I'm savouring and building up to. I'm going to get it connected to the reverb and then sit there and put together some really interesting... the nice thing that you immediately get from some of the patches that it comes with is the binaural effect.
Yeah.
And that's very distinctive. You really hear it, when, especially when you've got headphones on.
Excellent.
And I think that could be very interesting in respect of how you go forward designing programs or designing patches for it. So I'm not going to suggest I'm excited. I mean, I'm getting a bit jaded in my old age anyway with some of this stuff. But yes, I'm very pleased that I've managed to secure one. And I've got one, and it's mine.
Wonderful. Tales from my week are thin on the ground, so I shall update you, because there is a Modular Cafe, or in fact, a ModCaf Q121 update from Ian. So, Ian, if you haven't met him, you should have done, he's been on our podcast before, has let us all know, I'm just going to get the post on Facebook so I can read a bit more. Yes, Ian tells us all that, at last, the funding application for the Q121 project is submitted. So, we could be waiting up to 12 weeks for approval, but it's happened. It's there. It's in. The project continues. Very exciting.
So, how pivotal is the need for the funding? Because I know the funding is for the documentary film.
Ooh,
mostly,
it's,
isn't
it's
it?
It's for the whole beanbags, the whole deal. If we don't get the funding, it's not happening.
That's very definitive.
Yeah, absolutely. So, since we had to form ModCaf, the community interest company, to have something that can apply for funding, all this kind of official stuff, there is a bank account and there is some money in it, and it could probably buy a module. It could not fund this grand project, unfortunately. Yes. So, fingers crossed. But we've had a lot of support from the Arts Council themselves, as well as Rushmore Borough Council, and they are pretty interested and excited for the project themselves. So we don't anticipate much trouble. They might have tweaks for us, that one of their suggestions, or was it a demand? I don't know. They wanted a live event as well, so that will likely be happening.
In what venue?
In the wind tunnel.
Oh.
Mm.
Oh.
So it will be anybody who agrees to it that is involved in recording a song for the album will be invited to also perform it live for an audience.
Oh, I'm getting all excited thinking about LED curtains and lasers.
Ooh,
and
yes,
things like that.
So that would be another part of the budget, is having production for a live show. Obviously, we had to hire a PA and recording stuff.
That shouldn't be too expensive for a PA for the live event.
Yeah, we've got SFL. They're the guys involved. I don't know what their pricing's like. But yeah, it's not massive money. But like you mentioned, we have the documentary to think about. We have cinema screenings to think about. We have physical releases, venue hire, mixing and mastering, marketing. There's a lot going on.
Can I ask one quick question?
Yeah.
Are there any convolution maps yet?
No, that's phase one, and we'll be doing that once we're in. So I was talking to Ian about this the other day. What were we chatting? Well, apart from making those convolution files available, but yes, phase one will be where we create those files for people to get practicing.
Good. I need to get my hands on them.
Perfect. We'll let you know when they are. Speaking of ModCaffing stuffs, we are also now on Lines, the forum, and ModWiggler. So go and find us and join in, should you so desire. I think that's it for my update. It's news time! And there are a certain number of synthetic-y things. But first, commiserations must be shared. Another one's kicking the bucket. Hex Inverter.
No!
Really? Another big one, yeah. So when they say 2023, they're from Canada, which I didn't actually know. But yes, we have a statement, which I shall find some sections of. Unfortunately, the post-pandemic manufacturing climate was the final nail in the coffin for us at Hex Inverter. Today, we are announcing our intent to close down operations within the next year. I do not have an exact end date to share just yet, but I can tell you that it will probably be sometime in 2023. So they do have a bunch of modules that were out of stock for a while, and they're shipping a bunch of those, such as Mutant Brain. So get in there while you can. And they do go on to thank everybody so much for the wonderful years of modularing. But alas, we have to say goodbye to Hex Inverter.
As I stated in previous weeks, I just think we're in the midst of a sort of domino effect. They're just falling continuously now, aren't they?
Indeed.
So we've had a kind of rise over the last 10 years of all these boutique manufacturers, mm-hmm. you know, until there was a kind of crescendo. There were so many makes and models. And
yeah.
It was bewildering. Seems like they've all had a sort of natural life cycle, and they've all kind of been seen off by the pandemic and other forces.
Indeed.
It's really done for them. So it's going to shrivel back up. Be interesting to see who actually survives in the long term.
Yep, and I don't really want to think about how many more we're going to miss.
I've got a pile of hex inverter kits that I haven't even taken out the packets.
Hang on to them. They might be valuable quite soon.
I've got half built. I can't remember if it's Galilean moons or what was the other one? There was another one that was there was Galilean moons and Jupiter something or other.
Storm?
Yeah, that's the one. Jupiter storms and Galilean moons. It's all through hole and it's not skiff friendly.
Oh, it's a big one.
Yeah, it's deep.
Yeah.
The original design. I think when they made the retail version, the built one, it was all surface mounted.
One layer or something.
One layer. And this thing, the circuit board goes at right angle to the faceplate. And then you have to use lots of ribbon cables to connect all the pots up. It's all a bit of a hot mess, to be honest.
It is old school for the modular DIY world.
And it's only sort of partially built because I had to fabricate an actual aluminium sheet thing to support the motherboard and mount it on the plate. It was very much you're on your own, mate. But I've got a whole stack of the Mutant drum kits. Well, I say kits, I've got the circuit boards and the faceplates. I haven't got the bombs.
Alas. Another death I must announce.
Oh, there's another one.
There's another one.
They seem to be coming thick and fast.
Yeah. This one isn't a modular brand, though. This is Noise Kitchen from... Are they in Prague? Let me get this. Yeah. Noise Kitchen from Prague. So they are still, I think. They might be going soon. Anyway, they are a synth shop and workshop community space of awesomeness, which is something the ModCaf has vaguely aspired to be one day. And alas, they cannot keep going. They will remain a community of some form, though they don't know how that may be. Big sads all round.
Do you get the feeling we've reached peak modular?
Certainly there will be a levelling off somewhere, and I hope it's not too far down the other side of the hill, if you see what I mean. Yes.
It was getting a bit too much, though. It's
a lot of saturation of brands and options.
When you go onto Modular Grid, it was just becoming so bewildering. There were just so many manufacturers and so many models, and in some respects, a lot of duplication, and we've talked about it quite often, especially the utility modules.
Yeah, I mean, all brands are going to have a Malt and a Tenuverter, all that kind of stuff.
I'm sure there's going to be some more or new novel designs and things, but it seems as though that ran out of ideas.
That was a complaint shared by commenters on, I can't remember, it was another stereo oscillator or something that came out. Yeah, no, it might have been on the Kruan, the Instruo stereo oscillator. Commenters are saying, wow, looks like they've run out of ideas, chaps.
There is only so many directions you can take these things, I would imagine.
Indeed.
I suppose it's all about now getting your head down and making some music, or at least making some noises anyway.
Yeah. I have good news of a flavour that you will appreciate. Not necessarily you don't need to be happy about it, but it's a brand you like, a brand you definitely like. Stochastic Instruments have cleared their waiting list.
How long has that taken?
I don't know. A very, very long time. And they're celebrating by now offering the SIG and Expander under a single panel as the kind of default version. It seems nobody bothered not getting the Expander.
Almost think of phoning Finn up and asking him cheekily if I can buy a faceplate.
Sure, he wouldn't object.
I'm not too averse to having them separate, but they're almost compulsory. If you're going to have the Stochastic Instrument generator, you've got to have the Expander.
Yes, indeed. Because it was just one channel without it.
One channel without
it. Yeah, no good. One channel of CV gate. And does it have the triggers?
Yeah, I mean, the Expander just replicates everything again. So it's the same thing four times once you've got the Expander, which is quite nice. And you can stop and start them and things like that. Well, they're hanging in there anyway, aren't they?
Still going.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, I think 2023 is going to be a difficult year all round.
Most certainly. Right. One small nugget. It is official. The OP1 is no longer. The OP1 field is now the only option, the very expensive option. I wouldn't be surprised if original OP1 prices climbed.
Yes, but at the same extent, what are we looking at? We're still looking at £999 or whatever.
Oh, no, I think it's well past that.
Really? There's most probably been some inflation on top of that, so I can't imagine many people buying these, but I might be being a bit naive, but it's a lot of money.
£1,049 for people that still have the original OP1 in stock, and £1,999 for the OP1 field. 2,000 biggly English boys. Oof.
It's a good job they've got other products, isn't it?
Yeah. The pocket operators are amazing.
I know, and they, having said that, I haven't sold one in ages.
Yeah, they kind of haven't done much with them, and there's only so many people that want a pocket-sized sampler or a drum machine. Because the cool ones are the drum machine and the KO. Everything else is just a bit... Anyway. That's one guy's opinion, which is just my opinion.
No, I think they're quite nice little things if you're on a little budget and you've got no space at all.
Yep.
I suspect you can do quite interesting little things with them.
Yeah, we had a cool set at the outdoor modcaf at Waverley Abbey with CyberN Powers. He brought, I think it was the PO12, which is the drum machine, the rhythm, and the Soma Labs Rumble of Ancient Times, which is a glitchy thing. That's the only way I can sum it up, because I really don't know anything about it. Glitchy madness. But it sounded really cool.
On that note, did I say that I'm going to be selling my Soma Labs Lyra kit to someone?
Yeah, you told me. You didn't tell our audience. But how long have you been sitting on that and not doing anything with it, Pete?
I can't remember whether I got it in 2020 or 2021, but it's been there quite some time, and there's little chance I'm ever going to build it. And the particular gentleman that I ran into at an event relatively recently, we struck up a conversation and realized that we were both modular enthusiasts, and we started talking about it, and he said that he'd contacted Soma Labs and they weren't able to send him one, which reinforces what I was saying at the beginning of this year, that they might start having problems exporting from Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, they seem to be having problems.
That's the only way you can get the DIY kit, though, isn't it? That the,
yes,
directly
from them. So I don't know if they're having...
different issues with distributors, maybe?
Maybe they're having their fully fabricated units fabricated externally to Russia
and
from elsewhere.
Could be the case. Given how reasonably priced I think the Lyra is for something relatively through-hole, indestructible and super cool, I highly doubt they're handmade.
Well, looking at the circuit boards...
Do they have to be... Can you robotize through-hole?
No, not really.
Ooh, maybe I just did a stupid... They must be handmade by somebody with hands.
I mean, when you see the circuit boards and you understand what it will take to build one, they definitely will be handmade.
In that case, I will rephrase and say it's unlikely to be local labour.
Possibly. I don't know what labour costs are like in Russia.
Who knows? But yeah, that would be a good way of getting around any export issues.
You could imagine for convenience they may have already been doing that. I don't know much about the construction in the respect of actual production.
Yeah, modular news. Way back when, I don't actually know when, but a long time ago, do you remember Modal 001, 002 and 008, the Big Spenny Boys?
Yes, I do. We used to have one of each in the shop and they took forever to sell.
Yeah, do they still make them?
I believe they do, but they are for order only, certainly in our respect. We don't stock anything like that. We do the little Modal bits and bobs.
Yeah, which are pretty cool.
But no, the Big Boys, there's no way we would hold stock of those.
Just snooping on their website because I want to know. Yeah, so it's still listed there, the 00 series. In fact, yeah, they've got the rack mount versions as well. Anyway, they were just big in many ways, in sound and weight and looks. Cool machines, though quite niche. And I think at one point they said, yeah, we're going to make bits of these available as Eurorack modules. And then until now, we have Filton, which is a dual analog transistor ladder filter, and it's a Kickstarter project.
I suppose that's the way to do it now, unless you're assured that you've got the orders.
Yeah, larger brands just kind of use it as a pre-sale and easier funding for the first production run, I guess. But yeah, what have we got? We've got cutoff, level, resonance. That's fairly obvious. We also have a morph control. I'll find out what that does. And we do have drive for each of these. You can use them stereo. You can have a mix output, should you so desire. Let's find out what morph does.
Unfortunately, I tend to be a bit somewhat cynical and skeptical about synth manufacturers that decide to get portions of their design and throw them into modular. I remember when Dave Smith did a series of modules.
Those were in stock for ages and just never went anywhere because nobody cared.
I did have the filter for a time.
Yeah. Was it fine?
It was very uninspiring in the modular world, and I sold it and I don't regret it.
Fair enough. So this one will be available for a limited time, it seems. So the morph control will take you from a 4-pole or 24 decibels per octave low pass to bandpass to a 1-pole or 6 decibels per octave low pass. Word salad. Filter stuff. I don't know that there was anything really that exciting about the filters in the big modals, but it's cool and it's there, I suppose.
I think the thing about those was the aggregation of the of everything together and the level of detail, the level of control you had in the 002 and the 008, or was it the 001? It was the white one and there was the black one. And the black one was...
008 was the black one.
And it was analog.
And that was the poly. And I think the others might have been hybrid with analog filters.
Yeah. That was the white one.
Right.
But was that the 002?
Let me find out so we can not be talking out of our bums.
It's been so long.
We just haven't seen them for ages, have we?
I'm sure it's a 002 and I'm sure it just sat there for years on display. I don't recall many people even playing on it.
No. Were often baffled, as were we, to be honest. They were quite complicated.
Yeah, and expensive.
Mm-hmm.
What, about 4,000?
Oh yeah, big time. This is what Model say. Model has a vital history in designing a modern transistor ladder filter used in legendary products like the Model 002 and 001. That's a bit self-congratulatory, isn't it? Legendary, their own products. I don't know that they were. Anyway, the vibrant harmonics and smooth transistor drive deliver precisely the sound that demanding sound designers and musicians want from a modern reincarnation of this classic filter concept. Cool, there's lots of transistor ladders around. What makes yours so good?
Well, they're obviously going to big it up, aren't they?
Yeah. Who knows? It's there. If for some reason you loved those synths, then you can have it. Let's settle this. What were they? So, 008, big analog poly. We got that right, absolutely. 001, two-voice, duophonic, and bitimbral. Analog/digital hybrid architecture uses NCOs, I assume numerically controlled oscillators. High resolution and very stable oscillators. Those sound very digital to me, given that there are 50 different waveforms. And yes, analog filter. The 002 is a poly version of that. Big poly hybrid, 12 voice.
Yep, so we were pretty much on the button with those.
I do actually really like the design because they have that quite distinct sort of hourglass
shaped knobs.
Yeah, and they felt amazing because they were weighty, folded steel, screen was nice, clackety buttons.
Yeah, I couldn't get past the price, but we've gone way past that with subsequent releases from other manufacturers.
Yeah, like the vintage recreations. I'm just going to see if I can find any with a current price.
See if you've got anyone that's actually got any stock.
I highly doubt it, but I'm just seeing if anyone's even listing them.
I would imagine it would be a special order.
Okay, as far as I can tell, nobody has the 008 listed at all.
Yeah, I think we were one of the few retailers for it at the time.
Ooh, DV247 have the 002 listed, apparently.
Do they have any stock?
No longer available.
Okay. Mm,
that's what the retailer says.
Do you think they're just listing it on the Modal site, but it's still, or are they still suggesting it is available? I know.
Yeah.
I mean, I know some leading manufacturers are very lax in removing stuff from their websites.
Yeah. So, on Reverb, I'm going to see if I can find any historical sales. Okay, so Reverb, the last Modal big boy listings that I've got, we had a mint condition 002, that's the 12 voice, £4,722.
How much?
£4,722. This is a sold listing. Somebody paid that.
Secondhand or new?
Well, it says mint condition, but yeah, secondhand. This
Good grief, they weren't that much new.
And we've got a 008 here for £3,418.
Not so popular.
Mm. This is in America, though, so they could have been really hard to get hold of, and they thought, oh, I'll charge a bit more.
They'd have had to be exported, and they'd have paid duty and such like.
That's kind of all I've found.
Yeah, I can't imagine they sold many. That's most probably why they switched to the little stuff.
Exactly.
I wonder if they actually make it locally, or they just design it and then get it fabricated elsewhere. I have to look carefully on the bottom of one and where it's made.
Well, you're unlikely to run into one ever again, really, are you?
We've got all the Cobalts and the other one.
Oh, those ones. Yeah. No, those are definitely going to be made elsewhere, aren't they?
I would imagine so.
Yeah, they'd never get them that cheap otherwise. Anyway, moving on. What I do when I'm looking for things to talk about on the podcast, I'll just make little bookmarks in a little Rack Addicts folder. And this one, the bookmark simply reads, Hell on Earth. Roland have opened up a new store in London. Yes. Ooh, gross. Why? And I'm really pleased. The picture that heads up this article is moody. There's lighting. There's pianos. Whatever. The first thing that drew my eye was also noticed by a fellow commenter, which cracked me up quite a bit. There is on display in this flagship Roland store. So this is going to be, all current Roland, amazing stuff. Guess what is on the wall, pride of place.
Go on, tell me.
It's an SH-1, the Gaia, the horrible white cheap-looking thing.
Oh, Please, no.
Yeah, gross.
Whereabouts in London is it?
Denmark Street.
Okay.
The classic place for a music shop to be.
I see. So direct sales from Roland.
Indeed. Ooh, here's an interesting phrase. Roland plan to make classic products available via the store.
Classic products.
What does that mean?
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
So you say direct sales from Roland. I don't actually know if they're going to sell things from the shop. It's a bit confusing. So regular on-site workshops and masterclasses will be available with care sessions, which is probably you've bought an accordion, nobody in the world knows how to use it. Come up here for a session and one of our Roland specialists will pretend they know as well. And the store features a proprietary audience-specific experience where the lighting, audio and video are tailored to suit your individual tastes. What?
So do you
what
think
is it, this?
So do you think it'll just be musical instruments or they'll be selling some of their video equipment and other Roland products? Maybe some sewing machines?
Yeah, don't they do printers?
Yep.
Yep. So on the outside it says pianos, drums, guitar, bass, synthesizers, DJ. So I guess that's it. No printers for you, Pete.
Ah, damn.
Damn it. Okay, Gaz. Gaz, I know you're listening. You may well have finally caught up with all of our episodes and arrived at episode 140 a while ago, I think maybe at the Outdoor Modcaf. You asked me if I had something against Roland, and maybe, but now I've just pointed and laughed at their new shop, I think I should probably explain my feelings towards Roland. Pete, I think you're probably on a similar page to me. Roland, they have some unquestionably legendary products from the past, no doubt about it, and they're great. And more recently, they've gone and thought, you know what? These are going up in value. People want these things. Let's make them again. But wrong! Okay, so Dave Smith, Sequential now, of course, he got the name back. They re-released the big boys for massive money. Probably fair enough. Maybe they're expensive to make. I don't know. But people are buying them for that money, so it probably works as a business decision. Roland completely refuse to reissue that kind of thing. Now, they say, I'm pretty sure they've been interviewed and said something to the effect of, we don't want to live in the past, we want to make something new. So they re-release their old products in worse versions. They're just confusing me. Why do they keep making terrible versions of their old products? Why?
I don't even think they're versions. I mean, sometimes they'll take the design essence from some classic thing from the 80s.
They'll take the name as well.
I know, but they've been milking the name out of things like Juno for ever since, and Jupiter.
Yeah.
They just go on and on. But I just think everything they bring out is just a vehicle for the Roland Cloud library of sounds.
Yeah, System 8. I've forgotten what the new thing's called. Oh, the stupid bloody Jupiter thing.
Well, there's a Jupiter X. The current Phantom.
Yep.
The new Juno X.
Yep.
They're just rehashes of
All
the same things. But it's a synthetic versions of their original stuff. I mean, you can't fault Roland for the quality of the products.
Oh, yeah.
The way they're built. It's
quality. Top stuff.
Reliability. It's excellent, but it's not very inspiring.
Yeah, and you know, brilliant key beds and things, and there are certain products of theirs which are genuinely great. We love their pianos, don't we? And their drum stuff seems to get good reviews from people who know things about drums. It's the synthesizer-y thing that's and so Gaz, you have, what is it, it's the Jupiter XM, the little module. My issue with it is that it's called a Jupiter. And this rehashing of all the virtual stuff. If you ignore all of that, it's actually a brilliant little box. Somebody wants a synthesizer, like a virtual synthesizer and a piano and orchestral stuff in a module. And they thought, yeah, that's cool. People need that. But also it's really annoying to have a module and you have to hook something up via MIDI just to play the thing. So they put a little keyboard on there. Speakers I disagree with, but I think it's a cool device. It's quite expensive.
Yeah.
But that combination of stuff, super cool.
Yeah.
I have no problem with that. It's a cool thing. But Roland just make me angry. That's what. And what was it? The boutique version when they did a Juno more recently. And it's four voices.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm sure it all makes sense on a business level.
Yeah, I think they said it would have been twice as expensive to give it enough processing power to do six voices. Which, again, it's fair enough, but infuriating is the word.
But you can imagine they're a relatively large manufacturer of quite a varied range of different types of products.
Mm.
And I would imagine also that they really understand their markets, because we're just talking in isolation about the UK, but they're selling globally. And
we're synth enthusiasts.
Yes, exactly. So we've been a bit snooty about the whole thing, to be honest.
Most definitely.
But so be it. We're just a bit snooty about the whole thing.
And unfortunately, we've had the luxury of being around these super high-end, excellent products for, in my case, 3 and a bit years. You've been doing it longer. And yeah, you just get expensive tastes when you're around them and can play them whenever you want.
Plus the fact I had several of the original things from the 80s as well. So
indeed. There we go. Clarification. We don't hate Roland. They just annoy us sometimes.
Yeah.
Anyway, there we go. The end of synthesizer news for another episode, and time for the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation, otherwise known as what has Pete found on YouTube this week? But I'm going to go first because I found something on YouTube this week. Ha ha. This is a channel, a guy called Luke Million, who appears to have a rather extraordinary collection of awesome synthy mosaizors. Just in this one particular thumbnail, what can I see? An original ARP Odyssey. A clavinet, maybe. A Yamaha CP80. Something string synthesizer shaped. One of the Roland JPs from quite an early JP, I think. This looks like a Korg MS-20, and he's got a Moog Grandmother, which is cool, a modern one, which is nice. And one of the EMU samplery situations, Rhodes. He's got a lot of stuff, or at least access to it. But he does cool retro synth covers. And in particular, I enjoyed his Eve of War, the Jeff Wayne War of the Worlds soundtrack one. He did a good job on that. So go and find him if you like vintage synths and instruments and recreations and the like. It's good stuff. Pete, what have you found?
Right, I came across this particular YouTube channel only this morning. But
fresh, hot off the press.
Yes, but it's a good one. Anyways, it's called Cool Worlds. And they describe themselves as being on the topics of space, astronomy, exoplanets, astroengineering, and the search for extraterrestrial life and intelligence.
Fascinating.
So the Cool Worlds Lab, based at the Department of Astronomy at Columbia University, is a team of astronomers seeking to discover and understand alien worlds, particularly those where temperatures are cool enough for life, led by Professor David Kipping. And it's Professor Kipping who does the presentation on the channel. They are more long form than normal. The one I watched this morning was on the subject of quantum communication.
Sorry to interrupt, Ansible from Speak of the Dead, the Orson Scott Card book and other Ender's Game series
possibly.
Related stuff.
He also mentioned it's utilized in the Three Body Problem and in Mass Effect, the game. But he goes on to explain the theory in quite good detail, but still very digestible and understandable, and then explains how it may be impossible to actually work in the real world. But he also describes all the efforts that people have gone to try and get quantum communication working.
Super
cool. So that was around a 25-minute video, and there's many others on there, and they're well presented, well edited, and it looks like a lot of work has gone into it. He is a very good presenter. I would imagine if he's a professor, I think if you were studying astronomy, you'd be glad to have him as a lecturer.
Awesome.
But so that is my multimedia recommendation for this week, the YouTube channel Cool Worlds.
Wonderful stuff. Thank you, listeners, as always, for tuning in. It is a ModCaf tomorrow, in fact, as we record this, so hopefully we'll have some interesting news to share from that one. But for now, stay safe and we'll see you, or you'll hear us later. Cheers, bye.